Hi-ho, hi-ho, hi-ho. Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's home from work we go. Hi-ho, hi-ho, hi-ho.
There's a drop.
Okay. You want to hear something that doesn't make any sense?
You want to hear something that's not at all related to this episode? Here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition, a very heartfelt, loving, warm, hugtastic, kisserific, I'm making these words up as I go, Valentine's Day edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben, with me as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
My first kiss.
I want to see the talking baby, coochie coochie coo.
I'm a stupid jerk.
Whoa. Stupid jerk, stupid jerk, stupid jerk.
I am Gus.
Gus.
And
on this podcast, if it's your first time, what have you been waiting for? But on this podcast, just to give you a little taste of the glory, see what it tastes like. We take a film from our past, we watch that movie, then we immediately sit down, we discuss that movie, talk about what was good, talk about what was bad, then we submit that movie to the factory. This is the bulk of the show. This is where we take that movie we just watched and we discuss what it would be like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star in that movie? The actors and actresses involved. Modern booking, people. It's interesting. Listen to it.
Okay.
I'm very aggressive in this episode. Right. Happy Valentine's Day, motherfuckers. Yeah. Then we finish out the episode with a little bit of a question-y time, yeah?
Question-y time.
Question-y time.
The question time, but she comes. That's one too many. That's three Master Disguise references we've made already.
And we didn't watch Master Disguise. No. We did watch a movie with someone from it, though.
That is correct.
So on this week, this movie we had planned a little bit further in advance.
Last year.
Yeah, and basically, I don't know what it was. I wanted to do this movie, and some of you that are listening to this episode, you might be starting the episode and thinking, you know, I've never seen Whisper of the Heart, which is the movie we did tonight. I've never seen in a Japanese animated film. I've never seen a Studio Ghibli film. I don't like that style. One of the big reasons we wanted to do this, and you said it best earlier today, you said it's important that we do these. These are things that we like. We like these types of movies, these animated films. They're a big part in why you went into the career field that you wanted to go towards. And they're a big part in why we're talking about movies.
I also think, just as for many who find solace in art and find solace in anything, really, a lot of people, including myself, including you, we find comfort and joy in anime.
Yeah.
I think we should celebrate it.
Yeah, and the thing about this movie, before anyone says, oh, I don't know about this, it is a Valentine's Day movie through and through. It's a love story through and through. And it's one of my favorites. You, I think, said it was your favorite, if not one of your favorites.
I'll say it's one of my favorites, however, If I have to say it, it probably is. It's mainly my favorite because of memories,
yeah,
nostalgia. But I think this movie is very special. It'd be either Whisper of the Heart. I'm a sucker for Titanic. I am. I like something that makes me feel
like
me cry.
If I had to choose my favorite romance movie, probably 500 Days of Summer. But this is up there.
See, I put that as a romantic comedy, you know?
It's a romance movie.
Well, you know what else is a romance movie? Fucking
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber, you know? Something like that.
I don't think so. But
Ready to Rumble. Romance.
Wrestling's not fake!
Yes. I put Whisper of the Heart, Titanic, and a new one that just came into my realm last year, Your Name. Mm. Coincidentally, another anime movie.
So that's really what we want to drive home here is, you know, if maybe for whatever reason, you know, I have friends that are like, oh, anime, I can't watch anime. That's stupid. I don't like it. I don't
it's
get it.
The law.
Yeah. And you know, in my opinion, if you don't like anime, you don't have to watch it. That's by far. But there's nothing really different from this than any other medium of watching a movie. There's, you watch this film, you watch a Studio Ghibli picture, which is what this is by, which basically Japan's Disney when you really boil down to it. There's something magical about it. And then on top of that, it's just, if you don't like it, or as we're talking through it, just imagine like it's a live action film.
You know what I always say, when people come up to me just flat out, they're like, I hate anime. Why? I don't like it. It's, you know, it's just weird, or I never got into it, or I've never watched it. They just don't like it based on principle. I always retort and I say, do you like art? And they could either be like yes or no. Those who say no, I'm like, well, do you like food? Do you like, yeah, you know, really anything? Because anything is art. Like, do you like your iPhone? That's a piece of art, blah, blah. But those who say they do like art, this is an easier conversation. Oh, you like art. What kind of art do you like? Oh, I like paintings, or I like this or that. I'm like, okay. Well, you like paintings, movies. You like movies? Yeah. They're art. Live action, that's obviously what you like. That is a painting. Over here is a sculpture, different kind of art, but you still like art. So it's just a different way of telling a story.
Yes.
Okay. That's how I tell fools about anime or cartoons in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a different way to tell a story. Some people take to it, some people don't, but, we certainly do take to it. And, I'm glad you said we should do Whisper the Heart for, this time of year, our Valentine's Day special. And we're probably going to pursue this idea further in taking an animated movie and factoring it with live action.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty special that we did a Whisper of the Heart here, because neither you or I have seen this in probably upwards of a decade.
Yeah, close to, at least.
And this was a pretty potent movie in our high school days.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's something about it that I love about this movie. So let's kind of get into it. This movie follows a younger girl, age 13.
I think she's 13.
And she's in junior high, and she's preparing to take her high school entrance exams, take an exam to get into a good high school.
Asia.
Yes. And while she's a big bookworm, doesn't really study much, her parents let her get away with not studying because
she reads them fantasy books.
She reads really good books. And one day she just notices, comes across that some man has been taking out the same books as her. Every single book. She has a big stack of books on her desk. Every single book has been taken out by the same guy.
Now, how does she know that?
It's from the library, in the library card.
Oh.
And
one of those old, ancient relics.
Well, what I just think is interesting is think about real quick, you listening at home, you here, Goss. When you were back that age, 13, you know, something as simple as that, you get your heart warming, right? You get those butterflies, and you're like, someone out there is similar to me. Someone out there may like the same things as me.
Somewhere
out there, bleeding in the distance, let the beast inside. It's coming to Pittsburgh. Yeah. Phantom of Pittsburgh, more like it. Somewhere out there, underneath the 10th Street, Antonio Brown is being a jag-off. Let Le'Veon Bell go!
Our one listener in France is like, what the fuck?
NFL. Anywho. yes. So, yeah, but it does. It lets you, like, when you're that age, you get that little bit of that warm-hearted feeling. You know, someone, it's the little things. You even said it. You know, there's, moving on into this movie, you know, one of the first, we get introduced to the main character. Her name is
Shizuku.
And her best friend, Yuko, is wants to meet up with her, and her best friend Yuko tells her that she likes a boy, and she tells her who this boy is, and even right down to that, like, she even tells her, like, I don't think of boys. I never thought about boys before. And it's kind of like that age where girls and guys, they start to notice each other, right? And you, I don't know what it is about that. Like, you think back to that time, right? Mm-hmm. You think back to when you were young and that age, and, like, you were just, like kind of experiencing love for the first time, or what you thought was love. So it's kind of interesting to think about that, and I don't know what it is about this movie. The whole way through, you get that feeling again. Like, you feel, you remember those feels, like, that you had when you were, like, first kind of, like, growing up and first starting to notice, like, girls and liking girls and liking guys.
Or guys.
Yeah, in general, just liking whoever you like. So really, it's just interesting that it comes down to that feel that you get, the whisper of the heart.
There it is. This, what makes this movie so special is that it embodies innocence.
Yes.
And it is able to embody it right from the get-go and carry it along throughout the movie. And that's what you're feeling. That's what you're following. Because you're, wherever you're at in your life now, if you can think back to those innocent days where things were fresh and you're just full of life and experiences and not knowing what's ahead, like, that's what this movie perfectly is able to just show and portray, and you're along for the ride. This movie, another special thing about it for me personally, always been into anime, always loved it. Growing up, my childhood favorite movie was My Neighbor Totoro. I watched that, and Kiki's Delivery Service, two Studio Ghibli movies. Then I was real into Dragon Ball Z in my youth.
This time on Dragon Ball Z.
And I was into all kinds of those anime shows. And then I kind of not grew out of it, but just didn't really watch it as much.
Yeah.
You got into other things like Yu-Gi-Oh! And
Pokemon.
Pokemans and Beyblade, let them rip. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like,
being a kid was awesome.
What are you're still into Beyblade.
I wish. I sometimes, like, when we're, like, home, I'll go up in the attic, I'll find the old toys, and I'll see a Beyblade. I'm like, where the hell is my Ripper? I want to send that Beyblade across the floor. I find my Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I'm like, this is badass. I'm like, you have your Yu-Gi-Oh cards right on deck.
Right on deck. My deck's on deck.
Who'd you pull? Is that Red Eyes?
No, this is Ryukoki.
Ah! Karibu!
But anywho, getting back into... I'll skip that story for another time, but I was getting back into anime.
Yes.
I was buying more Studio Ghibli movies, and I remember it was a different time. I was younger. I didn't have access to Amazon.
We had FYEs.
Yeah, you had FYEs.
Somewhere. Yeah, it was like, what, nearest FYE was like an hour and a half from our house.
Yeah, you're not going to find these movies at Walmart, at least at the time.
Not now. Yeah, now you can.
Yeah.
Now they
or
have their
Best
own little
Buy,
section, yeah.
You know, things like that. But like when I was like 14, 15 years old, getting back into it, couldn't really find this stuff. I remember when I found this movie, Whisper of the Heart. We were at a Walden Books while we were visiting Grandmama. And I was working. Yeah.
Walden Books.
Them's is gone.
Yeah.
What
are books?
Them's is gone. So I was working. I was dishwasher. I had a little bit of money. And Walden. And I found a Studio Ghibli movie. I'm like, these are the movies I've been watching. Never heard of this one.
I remember that. I keenly remember that.
It was $30.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. It's expensive. DVD. That's still expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Single movie.
Blu-rays are cheaper than that.
You know?
Half the time.
But I bought the son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. And
it was a two-disc, if I recall.
It is. Yeah. I still have it. I showed you it tonight.
Yeah, special edition two-disc.
Yeah. And we popped it in at old grandmama's house. And it's funny, because watching this movie, if you look at the back cover, you see, like, this young girl in a beautiful red dress flying in the sky with a cat in a tuxedo. And you're like, oh, this is going to be a fantasy film. Mm-hmm. So you're watching it. And I was watching, I'm like, when's the fantasy come in? Where's that at? And you're just presented with this very realistic movie.
Yeah. Never comes.
Never comes. It was at the very end of the movie. It finishes. I'm like, and that's when it came to me, really. I'm like, where was the fantasy stuff? But I didn't care at that point, because I was so invested. But this was the first, for me, this first anime that I watched that wasn't fantasy.
Yeah.
And it kind of clicked in me. I'm like, oh, there's more than just, you know, guys fighting each other with lasers out of their hands, or witches.
This is stupid.
Or witches delivering baked goods, or young families finding, you know, enchanted Totoro things in the woods.
Yeah.
So this movie is very special to me for that reason there.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, I had a girl I was dating in high school, and I was madly in love, was going to be with her the rest of my life kind of story.
Yeah.
And so this movie fit right in. I showed this to her, and this was one of our movies.
Yeah. And that's what's so great about it, because I said, like, it almost encapsulates all those different moments that you have when you're young with the person that you like a girl you like when you're growing up, right? Or a guy you like, or anything. I just see saying girl from my personal experience. Yeah.
You know what else is interesting, real quick? You're going to carry on with what you're going to say.
Yeah.
This movie, it focuses on this young girl, Shizuku, yes, and she's the one going through these experiences that you're relating yourself to,
yes,
like having those first feelings of love. Like you say, you keep saying the girl, but you are experiencing this through the eyes of a,
yes,
girl. So I just want to touch on
and
that.
And also, too, what's interesting that I always found, all right, so, like, you think about that, like, think about back to who the first person you liked was or something like that when you were growing up. And you, like, when I watched this movie, I always wondered, man, I was like, maybe that's how they are, too. Like, maybe they're thinking the same way. Maybe they're thinking the same way as me. Like, this girl, and I'm, you know, it always the same feels. But, like, getting back to it, like, her friend tells her she likes this guy. And then later on in the movie, the guy that her friend likes tells the girl that his one friend likes her, and it upsets her so much because she likes him, and it's such like a young love scenario. Like,
she's crying.
I can't believe you would say that to me. You like someone else, and she was so upset, and he didn't even
know. Had no clue.
Yeah, and Shizuku had to end up like spelling it out to him, like, my friend likes you a lot. She's always liked you. And he's like, I didn't know that. I like you. And he likes Shizuku. And it's like such that young drama, you know, that you get at that young age. It's so interesting. And it's just like everyone can relate. It's so relatable.
It is relatable. And it's funny to like look back on that now and be like, ah, that's young problems. But if you really – and what this movie can do so well is bring you back to that,
yeah,
and make you present in that. And yes, they're young problems, but there's nothing more important than that,
yeah,
when you're that old. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting, so the boy that was checking out her books, his name was Seiji Awasama.
Almost.
Yeah.
Now you got me fucked.
Awasama.
Awasama, what are you saying?
Awasama.
Awasama? It's Anasawa.
Anasawa, that's, yeah, what it was. Seiji Anasawa.
Yeah.
So she eventually loses her one book that had lyrics to a song she was writing for graduation, and she runs back to find it, and she finds this boy reading it. And he tells her as he's leaving, he gives her a book back and tells her as she's leaving that the lyrics are very corny, and he rides his bike away, and it rages her to the point where later on it ruins the rest of her day, and
yep,
she thinks
stupid
about it.
Stupid jerk.
Yeah, she thinks about it the rest of the day, and then she gets home and she cries about it. And then she one day is riding the train and sees a cat, and she follows this cat to an antique shop, and she's encapsulated by this old man that tells her the story of this grandfather clock that he just got done repairing, and kind of telling her of this lost love that the story of the grandfather clock tells. And she was supposed to bring lunch to her dad that day, but she got sidetracked to this antique shop, and so she rushes to bring lunch to her dad. And when she's running up, the same boy pulls up on the bike that had given her back her book, and he has her lunch, and she tells her, he gives her lunch, says, "You're pretty forgetful, huh?" She's like, "Oh, yeah, sorry." She grabs it from him. She's like, "How did you get this?" And he's like, "Take a guess. You must have a pretty big appetite. Have a lunch like that." And she gets so upset.
This
again.
This guy's smooth.
Yeah. Like, even though it was for her dad, but
stupid
jerk. Yeah, and that, again, like, ruins her day. Like, he's, like, you know, so far it seems like these two people, they're butting heads so much. He's hitting her with all these, like, he's playing real cool.
He's too cool.
Yeah. But, and so that ruins the rest of her day. She even tells her dad, like, "I was having such a great day. It was like a fairy tale. And now it's ruined because of that stupid jerk." So, yeah, and then it moves on through the story.
You know, this these little beats of this movie, they sound so mundane, you know. It's like she's on the train, follows a cat, antique store, old guy.
That's life.
That's life.
Yeah.
And this movie...
And life, finds a way.
This movie is oozing with charm and beauty in the animation. The animation's so...
It's all hand-drawn. That's the thing you guys have to understand. Like, this anime, like, go back, watch Frozen. Everyone's like, oh, Frozen, amazing. It's all done on a computer. This was all literally
skill,
teams. Teams sitting down, hand-drawing, all hand-colored. Like, it's amazing. To the point where there's, like, little details that you have to appreciate. Like, her writing a paper and clicking, like, the mechanical pen.
Like, while she's thinking.
Yeah. Like, they had to add that in. They had to draw those frames. Like, that's amazing. You have to understand that. Like, you have to appreciate it, even if you don't like it, you know?
The details of this movie are astounding, just to look at. And, yeah, it encapsulates life so well and innocence so well. It just makes any little thing that happens in this movie, you're kind of engrossed in, I found, anyway. I love when she goes in that antique store and just is looking around and the music that plays and just the art style. And it just feels so cozy. And that the old man who runs the store, he's so welcoming.
Yes.
And
he feels like a grandfather character.
And, you know... when she's on the train and there's this cat, she's like sitting there and she's talking to the cat and the cat just kind of goes off. She's like, why is the cat on a train? Why'd he get off at my stop? I should follow it.
Yeah.
I've done that kind of shit before.
Yeah.
I've done that with stupid shit.
You've done that with bears.
I've done that with bears.
You're like walking through the woods. You're like, that bear's walking that way. I'm going that way.
This is a true story, folks. I'm like, I'm going to follow it.
Yeah.
So I did.
You got real close to that bear.
Yeah. We're friends.
Yeah.
Got real close. Yeah. So, yeah. And it was funny. When I first watched this movie, going back, I thought this was a fantasy movie. So when she's following this cat, I'm like, oh, she's going to follow this cat into another dimension.
Yeah.
It's going to be
where it gets good.
This is where they go in that fantasy world where I saw that cat in the tuxedo flying around the sky. That don't happen none.
But she does go to that antique store, and in that antique store, like we said before, she sees that the Baron, that statue of the cat that's on the cover. That's,
the tuxedo cat.
Yeah, the tuxedo cat. And the grandfather explains that the Baron is basically this statue that he loves, and it's waiting for its lost love. It has a sibling, or not sibling, but it has a partner. Another statue that goes with it. And he's waiting for it to get its partner back. So she keeps going back to this antique store, and it keeps being closed. And so one day or one night she goes, and it's closed again, and she's kind of worried. And she turns around to leave, and when you know it, coming up the hill is Seiji Awasawa. I'm going to mess his name up. Seiji. Just Seiji.
Seiji.
And she doesn't, at this point, she doesn't know that Seiji is the boy that had been taking out all the books.
And technically, from an audience perspective, we don't know that yet either.
No, we're not aware of that at all. So she doesn't understand, she doesn't know it's him. As far as she's concerned, he's a mean kid up until this point.
Stupid jerk.
Yeah, stupid jerk. Hasn't done anything for her. And so he pulls up and she says, is your grandpa okay? He hasn't had the store open for a while. And he's like, no, he's fine. He just keeps weird hours. And she's like, I was hoping to see the Baron, the cat. And he says, well, here, I'll let you in. I'll let you see him.
This guy's so smooth.
Yeah, so he wasn't even wearing a belt. So he takes
this
her down.
Kid fucks. he's always ready.
He takes her into the antique store and brings her up and shows her a secret kind of gem of the Baron. He tilts it into the sunlight.
Oh, yeah.
The eyes glisten. He says it's a mistake. The gems in the eyes are imperfect, even though she loves the statues. Not supposed to be that way.
You know, that's how they say it too. Like, this is something imperfect, but because of it's imperfect, it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's imperfection, yes. So he basically then says, you know, you can stay up here as long as you want. I'm going to go downstairs. And he leaves. And so she's there for a very long time. And then she comes downstairs and she kind of spies on him. And what I love about this scene is up until literally just before he came rolling up the hill on his bike, she hated him as far as she was concerned. She did not like him at all. And he rolls up, and you see, you know, you even said it. You're like, sometimes when you're young, like, all it takes is someone telling you they like you to, you know, to fall in love with them. And what's interesting is, like, you see them kind of, you see her kind of come to realize that this man or this boy is someone that she's interested in. This boy is someone that she really, really enjoys company with and likes. And so she comes down, and she's kind of walking slowly down the stairs, kind of spying on him. He's building a violin. And to this point, you really hadn't felt like he was, like, cultured or anything. Yeah. He's building this violin.
Like, oh, this is a real person.
Yeah, and she walks up, and he tells her, yes, I build this violin. And she's like, oh, that's fantastic. You're so good. And he said, I'm not nearly good enough. And she's so enthralled by him, like, knowing how to do this thing. And she asks him if he'll play for her. And he says, no. And then she begs, and he says, sure, but you're going to sing with me. And so he starts, gets out the violin, and he starts playing the song that she wrote lyrics for, which was Country Roads, John Denver. But for this movie, it was...
They just
rewrote the lyrics.
They rewrote the lyrics because she wrote it for her senior graduation.
Yes, so yes, based on the tune of Country Roads.
Yes, indeed.
And so they start singing, and it's just this moment through them singing... And him, you can tell, like, he's watching her as he's playing, and he's so focused on her singing, and she's, like, looking back to him and enjoying herself. You see her, like, loosen up.
Yeah, she finally, opens up.
Yeah, and it's just in that moment, like, you even said it, thinking back to that, like I said, you said earlier, you know, one person telling you they like you is like, oh yeah, they like me, okay, I like them too. But also it's always like that, you have that one moment, that one night, the first date, you're like, this person, this is the person,
just,
you know?
One night.
But or the, you know, that, like, this person I want to get to know, this is the person, and that was this night that is so well encapsulated. Like, you get that feeling from that moment, you're like, these two are a really good fit.
Yeah,
these two
are meant for each other.
Yes.
Let me preference this scene a bit too. Honestly, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but like, I'm all for top tens.
Top five, top tens.
I'd have to really think of it. Definitely top 10, probably top 5 favorite scenes in a movie.
Yeah, it's amazing.
This scene where the scene is titled Making Music. So Seiji and Shizuku, they are playing the song, singing, and as they're doing their little bit, the grandfather comes home with his friends, and they not a word is said. They just come in with their instruments, a cello, a guitar, a violin.
Is that a flute?
Yeah, flute.
Are you coming down here in the middle of the night and laying down flute tracks?
You goddamn motherfucking
stupid piece of shit!
But
thank you, Tenacious D.
So yes, but like, just everything coming together, they're making the music, Country Roads. That is not making music. This feels like magic. For me, it's like they just conjured this beauty. And I fell in love with this scene. I listened to it every blue moon.
I thought that was the song, like, to the point where, like, I prefer this version over the real John Denver version.
I listened to the John Denver version on the radio or at a bar or someone, like, singing karaoke. I'm singing the version from this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, because it's different lyrics. Check it out if you haven't. Check out this movie if you haven't. But, yeah, one of my favorite scenes in any movie, just because it feels like magic, and it's animated, but it's a real scene. It's not like explosions. It's not someone fighting off a dragon. It's not someone flying in the sky. It's just people creating music, and it's so special. It's all, for me anyway, and genuine. And that maybe that's another word for this movie. Very genuine, and that's something I appreciate.
Yeah, and then after, like at the end of that, they basically.
Is that close?
Yeah, it's close, but I don't know. I don't know if it'll come through the mic.
Oh, it did.
Well. That was nice. Anyways, so yes, at the end of the scene, the grandfather says, "So Seiji, I didn't know you had such a nice friend." And Shizuku gets very kind of flabbergasted by that moment because she kind of comes to realize that this is the boy that's been checking out the books. This guy that she thought was a jerk up until this point, and it can't be true because he's supposed to be cultured. He's supposed to be so nice and kind.
Her fantasy, yes.
She needs that fantasy ending.
Wait, is your name Seiji Amasawa?
Yeah,
yeah,
they,
of course.
They get she gets angry at him, and he gets really defensive. Like, well, what's wrong with me?
Like, well, I'm a fighter. Yeah. That's what I made.
Yeah. That's who I cast as him, by the way. Sylvester Stallone's going to be playing a 13-year-old high school student. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, he's played the toy maker. Spy Kids. He's done
next
worse.
Next level. But he's my Baron. But yes, so basically they're like arguing and the old people start to laugh and giggle at their just it's almost like they're remembering.
Yeah.
Think about that. Like these I've been saying the entire time this movie is just like nostalgia overload in terms of like not just the movie, but nostalgia overload that you're thinking back to like your first crush or your first love. So really it's like interesting that you think that way, but it's almost like they're like thinking back to their own experiences and they're laughing and giggling at that. But then the next scene shows Seiji walking Shizuku home, and they're just kind of talking with each other and discussing their life and discussing things. And Shizuku saying, you know, my mom's really busy going to school, I have to study and do all this stuff, but I just spend all my time reading. And he says, you know, I want to be a famous violin maker someday.
Yeah, and he wants to go an apprentice in Italy.
Yes, and his parents won't let him because his dad's a doctor, and
they want him to go to high school.
Yeah, they want him to go to high school, and he wants to go and become a violinist or violin maker. And his grandpa's trying to convince him, and he basically spills his guts. He tells his very personal story to this girl, and the girl's like, "That's so amazing! I wish I knew what I wanted to do with my life."
She admires his drivenness.
Yeah. His drive, and so the next day...
His drivenicity.
Yes. But then the next day, they're at school, and he comes to her class and asks for her to come out and talk to him, and the whole class is freaking out and like, oh, she's got a girlfriend, or a boyfriend, she's got a boyfriend, and yelling and screaming, and they decide to walk up to the roof, and it's raining, and he tells her that he's going to go to Italy and study for 2 months. 2 months he's going to apprentice under this violin maker, and if he's good enough, he stays. If he's not good enough, he comes back, and he goes to high school, and then he can go back and practice. And you can almost see it in her eyes, like she was excited for him, but then she kind of comes to the realization that he's going to be gone for 2 months.
And she's just starting to get the feels real hard.
She's
like,
just starting to get the feels. And then the sun comes out and they run over and they're looking at the sun. And, you know, he kind of, what'd she say? She says, you know, you already know what you want to do with your life. And all I've been thinking about the past couple weeks is how we're going to go to the same high school, or hoping that we would go to the same high school. And it's like that moment where you're like, She just kind of said it, like blurted it out, her feelings that she has for this boy. She wants to go to the same high school as him. And he tells her, you know, it's funny, like, I noticed you long before you noticed me. He's like, I first saw you at the library reading. I walked by you thousands of times. I sat down next to you. I sat down across from you. I even started renting the same books that you rented.
And just, other random ones.
Yeah, and random ones, just you know, so that if she checked them out, she would see his name.
Notice him.
And notice him. And it worked. And then...
You know why this guy's so smooth? He admits all that. That he was, like... He had
creepy.
No, that's not... that's the problem with the world today. That's not creepy.
No, it's cute.
It's cute. And he likes this girl, and he just wants to get to know her, but he's too shy. So he like, walks by her, sits by her, and she doesn't notice him. So he does that tactic of the books. And... Right?
Yeah.
And now, when they actually talk to each other, and especially in the beginning, he plays it so fucking cool.
Yeah.
He's, like, teasing her, and then he walks away. Like, he's like, hey, you want to come look at my antique store? You hang out here. I'll be downstairs.
Yeah.
See ya.
Like, this kid's wise beyond his years.
Yeah.
Because I even said to you, I'm like, when you have that first crush, and you're like, you finally get a chance to, like, spend time with them, or, like, maybe spend time or like with them and their friends or something, you're like, I'm all about it.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here now, you know? But, like, I'm thinking back in, like, then, this kid's, like, wise beyond his years.
He's got the game beat.
Yeah. He got them. He hit up, up, down, down, double B, A, A.
close enough. he's like, I already got this game beat. I'll see ya.
Yeah. But no, and that's kind of, but then while they're having this kind of heartfelt discussion, and you can see that she's kind of like thinking off into the distance, oh, you know, I'm going to be here, and he's going to be going off living his dream, and all I'm doing is preparing for stupid high school. All these people are eavesdropping, and they all fall out behind them, and she realizes it, and she chases them all off, and her two friends are kind of hiding in the corner, and she comes out, and she's kind of looking, and then she starts to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that feeling that it's like she's realizing, you know, he's going to go. He's leaving. She's just starting to get the feels for him, and he's gone.
And it's around this time that she makes a very big decision on her part. First big decision she's ever really made.
Yes.
So this boy that inspires her with his drive, and he's actually pursuing...
I believe it's drivenness.
His drivenosity.
Yeah, drivenosity.
He is going off to Italy to pursue his dream, and he's going to be gone for 2 months. So she feels, she makes a goal for herself. She realizes she wants to be a writer.
Yes.
She's got 2 months to prove herself. That's the goal she makes for herself. So she buckles down and starts to write her own book.
Yeah. And if she's going to have the old antique man read it. And if she's good enough, then she will dedicate her life to reading. Like Seiji will dedicate his life to violin making if he's good enough.
Writing, rather.
Yes. So she... starts writing this book on the Baron, the statue that she has kind of fallen in love with.
Yeah,
the antique store.
Also inspired her.
And that's really the fantasy moments that you do get, the interesting.
Maybe that's why I was satisfied when I was younger watching this movie, is because you do get...
brief ones.
You do get... It's her writing her fantasy story, but visually they play out.
Yeah. And what's interesting that I noticed, and we'll touch on it, but the very first scene you see with the Baron is him and her... Like, the Baron and Shizuku standing over, like, this fantasy realm. But, like, in the distance, you can see these giant buildings. And then close up, everything that's big, it looks small. And he says that. The time is right. The space-time, whatever, is melding. What is gigantic looks small. And what is small looks even smaller. And we'll get over it in one leap. And what's interesting is, I don't know if you noticed it, but the end shot of the movie... is almost like parallel to this moment when they're looking over the city, and in the distance, all the big buildings. It's that right time of day. All the buildings in the distance look very small, even though they're giant. They're the city buildings, and everything close looks even smaller than before. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. But yes, she's writing this book ferociously. She's failing school because of it. Her parents basically decide, you know, we'll let you do this for now. Follow your dream. Because I think they're banking on her coming to her senses. She finishes her book, and she gives it to the grandfather, and he tells her that it's good. He reads it all, and he says, it's very good, but it's still rough. It's your first draft you've ever written. First thing you've ever written, it's rough. It's got rough edges, but there are gems in that book.
And he gives her the analogy earlier in the movie. They have a little meeting in the antique shop, and he shows her a what do you call those? A geode.
Yes, geode. With an emerald inside.
Yeah,
or emeralds.
And he explains to her, like, you see that gem in there, you know, it's going to take years to polish it before it's worth anything. And even deeper in there are smaller gems, and even deeper than that, there are even more precious ones. And he uses that as an analogy, like, everything's rough, but you got to work at it to make it worth something.
Yes.
And that is you said it just right. That's exactly what he says, is it's good. It's your first draft. There's some real gems in here. He's got to polish them now.
Yeah, work on it. And she's so upset because she tried so hard, and she thought, you know, it would be good. Like, it would be really good, but at the end, it still needed practice. But she also she has to calm down a little, and he does calm
it down.
But he tells her that Seiji, when he made his first violin, he was more upset than her. He was so upset with his violin making. So she, again, has this common ground with Seiji. And so she goes home and she tells her mom, you know, I'm not gonna write anymore. I'm gonna go to high school. I'm gonna continue my training. I need to polish this. I need to learn more about writing. And she goes into her room and she passes out. And her Her dad,
finally.
Her dad tucks her in, yeah, and the next day she wakes up, and she just happens to kind of get this feeling that she's going to look out the window. And she looks out the window and looks down at the ground, and there's Seiji on his bike. And she runs downstairs to see him, and he says, "I came home a day early," and it's been 2 months. She's been counting the days, and she's so excited to see him. And I just remember that, like, she hops on the bike, and they really hadn't had the biggest moment of tenderness they had is before he left. They held hands for a second, mm-hmm. and she hops on the bike with him, and he gives her his coat because it's cold outside, and she's riding on the bike, and she says, "It's like, I can't believe you're here. This must be a dream. Who cares? It's a great dream." And she kind of like touches her head to his back, and he's riding up the hill. He decides that he's going to ride up this hill with her on the back of his bike to prove his love. She says, "You know, if I'm going to be with you, I'm not going to be a burden." And she gets off the bike and helps him push up the hill. And they rush to this, you know, this point that he goes to get inspired. And it's this overview of the city and it's sunrise. And like I said, it looks very similar to what it did in the story that she was writing. And, they're looking at this and she says, "Come here, it's getting cold," and he basically tells her, "You know, it might be stupid, but do you think one day we can get married?" And then the Japanese version is a little different. I think he actually proposes to her in the Japanese version. But he says, "You know, one day, do you think we can be married?" And she says, "Yes." And he said, "My violin making, you being a famous writer," and then she says, "Come here, it's getting cold," and he says, finally expresses his love, and he hugs her, and that's where the movie ends.
Beautiful. And yes, you are correct. In the Japanese version, he flat out proposes to her.
Yes.
And she says yes, and he's like, "Shizuku, I love you," and they're going to get married.
Yes.
And the American version, which they dubbed in 2006, they thought it might be a little odd for our culture anyway for a 13-year-old and a 14-year-old to say,
yes,
let's get married. So they just presented it in, like, can you see us getting married someday kind
yeah.
of thing.
At that age, yeah, you probably do.
The writer of this film, Hayao Miyazaki, he chose to have them propose to each other because he wanted them to commit to something, is what he said. He also said, let me get my glasses here.
Hayao Miyazaki, just a real quick reference,
really
Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah.
Old Hayao.
Well, real quick, before we mention Hayao Miyazaki, because anyone who has seen any Studio Ghibli movie, even people that haven't, Hayao Miyazaki is fantastic. But the director of this film, Kondo.
It's Yoshifumi Kondo.
Yes. He was selected by Hayao Miyazaki to really take over for him when he retired. When Hayao Miyazaki retired, he wanted this Kondo to take over for him. And unfortunately, very sadly, Kondo passed away 2 years after the making of this film. 3 years, in 98. And very suddenly. And so Kondo never had the opportunity to take over for Hayao Miyazaki. However, who is Hayao Miyazaki, really? Like, when
so,
you get down to it.
Hayao Miyazaki is obviously a very famous animation director.
Won an Oscar for Spirited Away.
Yes. So he got his start in animation in the late 60s, early 70s, and he worked his way up until he was ready to create his own studio. So him and his friend, Isao Takahata, they created Studio Ghibli. After the success of their film they made together, Nausicaä, The Valley of the Wind, they pursued their studio, Studio Ghibli, and they created their first film under that moniker, Castle in the Sky. They've gone on to make other classics. I say classics in, like, the most respectable way you can.
Because there's really not a bad one. Mm. That's what's
not under those,
so much heart and soul into it.
Not
movies.
Under any film that those two have made. I hope I don't miss any, but Castle in the Sky, like I said. My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies.
House Moving Castle.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to go in order here. Kiki, Do You Love Me? Kiki's Delivery Service. Whisper of the Heart. Porco Rosso. Pom Poko, which is hilarious. Princess Mononoke. Spirited Away.
Well,
House Moving Castle. There's other ones, too, under this umbrella, like Cat Returns, Only Yesterday, amongst others. But yes, Ponyo, Wind Rises, Secret World Arrietty, Tales of Earthsea, and it even today, you know, they're still making films. So Hayao Miyazaki and Aizawa Takahata, they had this young man at the time, Yoshifumi Kondo. He was an animation director, like the actual animating director, for many of these Studio Ghibli films. He actually got his start on the show of Lupin the Third back in the day. And Hayao Miyazaki, his first theatrical film was that he directed was a Lupin the Third movie. So anyway, he worked on several of the films, and he finally got his chance to direct a film because he was being groomed, yes, to be to get the keys to the kingdom someday. So he made Whisper of the Heart, and truly beautiful storytelling. Once again, I strongly suggest people reach out if you can find it. Check it out. It's a delightful film. And then after this, he was also the animation director for Hayao Miyazaki's next film, which was Princess Mononoke. And that's where, shortly after, he passed away of an aneurysm. And upon that, Hayao decided to retire. And he didn't fully retire, obviously. This is 1998. He went on, he's still making movies. But it said he was so, shocked and hurt by the loss of his friend and apprentice that he said his stories. But once he visited a village while he was vacationing, he got inspired to do Spirited Away, and the rest is history as far as that goes. But yeah, so that's a little bit on Yoshi Kondo there. So Hayao was quoted in saying, let me see, I had it here. Da, 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 da. Okay, he says, "The film will represent a type of challenge issued by a bunch of middle-aged men who have lots of regrets about their own youth to today's young people. It will attempt to stimulate a spiritual thirst and convey the importance of yearning and aspiration to an audience that, just as we middle-aged men once did, tends to give up easily on the idea of being stars of their own stories."
Yes.
So I think it was interesting that you mentioned when Shizuku and Seiji were button heads about, like, "You never told me your name," after they were just done making music, and the old men are in the corner laughing, like, it's kind of looking back
Yeah.
on their youth. And yeah.
And you even said it said there too, like oftentimes we choose not to be stars in our own story or forget to be stars in our own story. And her dad, when her dad's basically saying, like, we'll let you do what you want, but he says, you know, it becomes very difficult when you choose to go against the grain, when you choose to go against, you know, what everyone else is doing and doing something that you want to do, though. That's what you want to pursue. It can be very hard. And if it doesn't work out, you have no one to blame but yourself. You have to
Powerful.
get yourself there. And that's kind of what they're saying. Yeah, you have, if you want to be the star in your own story, you want to do something different, you have to make it work. If you don't, that's, you have, the only person to blame is yourself. So yeah, it's a very, very good movie. If you've never seen it, if what we have told you tonight, this doesn't do it justice either. That's the thing. Like you should watch this movie. It's so good. I haven't seen it in entirely too long, so I was very glad we
Yeah.
watched it tonight.
It is, it's a movie about real life things. Real life experiences that one could have, but there's true magic.
And so I definitely give it a watch if you haven't. But for the next portion of the show, the factory here, we're going to try and attempt to make this movie. Imagine if it was coming out today, 2019, but also coming out today in live action. So we might change up a few things for that purpose. And really, as far as it goes, this is a sin. Like, this movie's perfect the way it is, really is. As are a lot of movies we watch on the show. Yeah, with Whisper of the Heart. So on this portion of the show, we take the movie we just watched and we submit it to the factory. This is where we imagine what this movie would be like if it came out today. Like I said, for this movie specifically being an animated film, we're going to imagine what it would be like if it was live action and coming out today. So we'll pick a new director, we'll pick a new composer, and then for our actors and actresses, our characters that we're going to be casting today, we're going to do Shizuku, we're going to do Seiji, Shiro, the grandpa in the
Antique store.
movie, Antique Store, and then the Baron, the voice of the Baron, the cat in her story. We're going to do the voice of the Baron. So, for Whisper of the Heart, the remake here, director, who you got?
I'm going with old Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay.
Okay.
He did Prisoner of Azkaban.
Correct. Harry Potter and Prisoner of Azkaban. He did the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock. And
he's very artistic. Director,
yes. You know? And he's currently up on the Oscar list for his new film, Roma.
Okay.
Okay. So he's a Mexican filmmaker. He would bring just a different, culture, to his directing style and his storytelling. And he's dabbled in youth, with Harry Potter and things like that. But he's also dabbled in romance throughout his career. And I would just like to see someone bring some, maturity to this real life story about young love.
So for my director, I chose a man that's done one of my favorite romance movies. Also a man that's done one of my favorite movies in general. And that is a Mr. Rob Reiner.
Oh, Robbie baby.
Rob Reiner, Princess Bride, Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Harry Met Sally. Great, great, great romance movie, Misery. A Few Good Men. I mean, literally, listen to this. Those are five movies. Those are his five, in a row. 1986, Stand By Me. 1987, Princess Bride. 1989, When Harry Met Sally. 1990, Misery. 1992, Few Good Men. And that, those are his movies right then. Those are all,
he's certainly
phenomenal.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And,
What's he done lately?
His most recent movie was called Shock and Awe, which has old Tommy Lee Jones in it. Hmm. He did that LBJ movie a couple years back. Bucket List was probably his most recent success film that I see on his list that I really know. I think back to The Princess Bride and that story of love and that fantasy and that fairy tale esque world, and also in Whisper of the Heart, Cary Elwes. He is the Baron. He's the voice of the Baron. And Princess Bride, Cary Elwes. He's
you ain't wrong.
The pirate Dred Robinson.
Robinson.
Dred Pirate Robinson. I haven't seen Princess Bride in entirely too long.
Inconceivable.
Yes. But, yes, Rob Reiner as my director.
Well, grab that rusty coin. We're flipping for it.
Yeah, hopefully, maybe I get the clean sweep this week. All right, yeah. So heads, Rob Reiner. Tails, Alfonso Cuarón.
And?
Tails, Alfonso Cuarón. It's not a good start.
It's a good start for me.
Alrighty, so composer.
Easy. I'm sure you and I have the same composer. So, who composed this originally? Do you happen to have the name on deck?
I do not happen to know that. However, I know who didn't.
I know who didn't, and I guarantee we have the same fucking one. Hold on, Bill. I'll get it here. Hold on, let me find it. Whisper of the Heart composer. Come on now. Why is it not coming up like I want? It's Yuji Nomi. He did that originally. I don't know why I took so much trouble to find it, because that's all I was going to say is his name, Yuji Nomi. The music is wonderful in this movie.
Has a little quirkiness to it at times.
A little bit here and there. And at one point you said, you're like, this is no blah, blah, blah. And exactly why, because that's who my composer is.
Mine too.
Joe Hisaishi.
Easy.
Joe Hisaishi. Easy. I was going to say he's my favorite composer of all time.
He's one of mine.
He's either tied for number one or he's easily number two.
Yes.
Between John Williams and
Phenomenal.
Him.
Phenomenal.
He does the music in almost every movie I mentioned earlier, in Nausicaa, The Valley of the Wind, in Castle in the Sky, My Neighbor Totoro, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away. Did I say Kiki? Kiki's Delivery Service, yeah. So many
more westernized Ni No Kuni 2, the video games.
Oh yeah,
for
yeah.
PS4 and PS3.
He dabbles in that, and he doesn't just dabble in animation. He does live action films as well. So check out his discography if you haven't. Incredible.
He's on Spotify.
Beautiful music.
Yes, yeah, and he's who I had.
That
as
was
well.
Easy. Yeah, easy does it. As soon as you said we were going to do this, I knew we're going to have the same composer.
Yeah. All right, so for our actors and actresses here, do you want to do Baron, Grandpa, Nishi, Seiji, or Shizuku first?
Whoever you want.
All right, Baron.
You want the Baron.
Yeah, the Baron. The voice of the Baron. So this is the cat in her story that talks, and he's very Kingsley, and, mm-hmm. and has he was originally voiced by Cary Elwes.
So it's funny, because this character isn't... You don't hear a lot from him. Maybe two or three scenes?
Yes.
So memorable, though.
Yes.
And the character of the Baron
memorable
is...
Memorable enough to spur his own prequel movie.
Oh, yeah. The Cat Returns. Yes. A prequel movie to this. However, it is not a prequel in that of the story. It's a
prequel to, like, her book she wrote.
Kind of, yeah. It takes the character of the Baron, but gives him his own story from years ago. Anywho, that's that. Mine, Cary Elwes, so smooth.
Yes.
Perfect voice for this character. However, I'm gonna go also smooth, classy. I'm going James Bond. Oh, I might just change on the fly. Nah, I gotta stick with my original pick.
Change it. I want to know who you got. Who hit you that almost made you change what you were gonna go with?
The both Bonds, but which? I'm changing to Pierce.
That's who I have.
No.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan. I was hoping you were changing it away from Pierce.
I had Timothy Dalton.
No,
originally.
I had Pierce Brosnan.
Do me a Timothy Dalton.
You didn't really think I knew
that's,
you were
that's
giant.
Pierce Brosnan. Do me Timothy
I'm
Dalton.
I'm a slasher, and I have to be stopped.
What?
Of prices.
Now do Pierce.
You didn't really think I didn't know you were Chinese intelligence, Chang.
That there's no one sexier than Pierce Brosnan, I'll tell you what.
I'm the Baron.
There's no one who
I'm
sounds
the
like
Matador.
November Man.
Mamma Mia.
SOS.
Mojito.
There's no one who sounds like they're just holding in a good fart more than Pierce Brosnan.
Nah, I'm the Baron.
No, for me.
Yeah.
Excellent. Sexy. Pierce Brosnan, smooth as baby shit. That's the Baron right there. Yeah, Pierce Brosnan.
Easy. All right.
Do you like Pierce
that's
more?
That's who I had.
That's you had?
Yeah, that's who I had. It's written down already.
Or did you like my little idea of old Timothy?
I had Pierce, so we're doing it.
Yeah, Timothy, he's a little too... He's a little too gruff.
Yes. Anyway, next up, Grandpa Nishi, Shiro Nishi, the grandpa, the owner of the antique store that tells Shizuku about the gems she has.
Okay. Who do you got?
So I wanted to go with someone that was very welcoming, very kind, but also had just that experience to them, and that you know that they could tell a story and you would fucking listen.
I already know you're going to say
that's old Sam Elliott.
That's not who you
had in mind, I guarantee it. Sam Elliott walking in. It's been a while since I had guests in here. Country roads.
That's unsettling.
Why'd you take my voice?
He's like, why don't you come on in? We'll have a course and ride my Dodge.
I'll read your book. There's gems in there. Could have been old Kurt Russell.
Let me ask you, are you casting Sam Elliott just because of the mustache and this grandpa?
No, not really. I wanted an actor that you can... I mean, when you look at Sam Elliott, you think, damn, that mustache. But the second thought in your mind is, that's some experience right there.
He's seen it all.
Yeah, he's seen a lot of banquet beer. He's seen a lot of wildfires.
Shit. I was going to go originally... I had a pick just to be a little different, but then upon watching the movie, I was like, he's not welcoming. I was going to go with Bob De Niro, Robert De Niro.
Whoa, we're really shelling out.
He'd be like, hey, come in my store. He's always breathing through his nose. Hey, come on in.
I don't like that pick, though.
I don't either, because that's why I didn't go with it.
Yeah.
What if Jimmy Stewart was Grandpa?
Wow, Jimmy Stewart. She wouldn't even have to write the book. He would tell her it sucked. He's like, I tried to follow my dream once, went to college. Here I am. I own an antique store.
Shit.
So maybe you should just stick to what you're doing.
Now, I'm going with my pick is solid. It is Christopher Plummer.
Okay. I knew this name.
Yes, you do. He is he's a very classic actor. He recently won an Oscar for the movie The Beginners, being the oldest ever winner of said Oscar. And even last year, he got nominated for Best Actor. He replaced Kevin Spacey.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he only filmed for like 3 days or something. He got nominated for an Oscar. I'm trying to think of movies you might recognize him in. He was in Girl with Dragon Tattoo. I don't think you've seen that. He's really good in it, though. And he's in, I know you've seen this one. He's a lot younger, but he's in The Pink Panther Returns.
Woo.
He plays the Phantom in that one. But, yeah, Christopher Plummer. Oh, you've seen him in The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. He is Parnassus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you see him there?
Yeah.
But, yes, he's very welcoming, and he's got that very kind English voice, and he looks like a grandfather, and he could be your grandfather.
I am your grandfather!
that's the guy to play over here.
All right, yeah, well, I'm willing to flip you for it.
You're going to have to, because I'm sticking hard with old...
head Sam Elliott and tails Banquet Beer. head Sam Elliott, tails Chris Plummer. Ew. Heads Sam Elliott.
You know, if Jimmy Stewart was here, he'd tell you that pick sucked.
They tell me none of the sort. All right, Seiji next.
None of the sort.
Seiji next. So I think it's important to note, we both decided for this movie, we kind of suck when it comes to drafting younger talent. And just for the purpose of our remake here, what are you thinking? You want to do like... I was thinking almost, because it's changed, because if we're Americanizing this film, we don't really have high school entry exams. You do have college entry exams, though. So I was kind of thinking like senior year high school going into college kind of deal.
Yeah.
Thinking. So we have... It's our factory, so we're... I was thinking older actors playing high school kids.
It's our factory, and we're tasteless, dumb buffoons, and we don't know young actors from across the globe.
Unless it's Stranger Things. So we're just going to do as if they were 12th grade students going into high school, and they can be 28 and play an 18-year-old. Here we are.
Hey, Leo DiCaprio is still doing it.
Yeah, hey, we're fine.
Fucking Tobey Maguire was playing a high schooler, and he was 30.
Yeah, so here we go. So Seiji, our love interest of the film, violin maker, very soft-spoken, but also very kind. What are you thinking?
I mentioned him on this pod before. I'm real big on his shit, and he don't say fuck.
We probably have the same person.
No, we don't.
I already know we do. Say it.
Timothée Chalamet.
Fuck, no.
See, I know you're wrong. So Timothée Chalamet, he's been nominated for them Oscars, but he plays that quiet, cool, real good, like. I was watching this movie, and if you've seen any of his other films, whether it be Beautiful Boy, or Call Me By Your Name, or I'm trying to think what else he's done. May Lady Bird, if you've checked that out. He's got this like, cool experience thing down, and he's musically inclined, so how about that?
Well, for my pick, I have an actor that you do like. I wasn't entirely sure on him, though, in terms of, like, I think he would look, he looks young enough, but also, I don't know, he's a phenomenal actor, love him and everything I've seen him in, and that's Freddie Highmore.
Ooh.
Yeah.
August Rush.
Yeah. But he would, I mean, the Good Doctor, Bates Motel, Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, himself. He's a great actor. Like, phenomenal actor, really. And I think he looks young, doesn't he? Like, he looks real young. But I think he would be able to pull this off, be him musically inclined or not. Freddie Highmore.
Didn't we do this once where...
you had Freddie Highmore for something.
No. I don't think so. I had Timothée Chalamet for like Edward Scissorhands, and you said Freddie Highmore. Or no, that was one of... Oh, hey, that was one of our listeners who brought that out to me later. I was like, ah, fuck, that's a good pull too.
Yeah.
My mistake. But yes, Freddie Highmore and Timothée Chalamet. You got me good.
You just want to agree with me? Freddie Highmore. You seen him in The Good Doctor.
I've also seen him in Bates Motel, mother.
I've also seen him in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Nothing goes better with cabbage than cabbage. I quote that unnecessarily amounts.
Like, you just did.
Yeah, but, like, I quote that moment. Like, Claire, like, my fiance and I will be at the store, and I'll be like buying food and be like, we need a head of cabbage? And she'll be like, no, why? I'm like, nothing goes better with cabbage than cabbage.
I'm going to flip you for him because you Freddie Highmore.
You don't. You really think you'd be that stupid?
I love Freddie Highmore. He's one of my favorites to see. However, as far as Seiji goes, I don't think he's got that cool factor down. Timothée Chalamet does.
He would make it happen.
He'll act like he's got it.
All right, so Freddie Highmore heads Timothée Charlemagne. Champagne. Charlemagne for Tails.
And
heads. Okay. Freddie Highmore.
This is your movie.
This is my movie. We did agree on a couple of those. So last up, Shizuku.
Shirashima.
Yar. Who you got?
Shizuku Midoriya. I'm still fluttering around here. I'm between two. I got Abigail Breslin on the mind. I got Elle Fanning on the mind. Okay. Both very excellent actresses. Have you seen a lot of their work? I know you've seen a lot of Elle Fanning. I wanted a young actress who had some chutzpah, you know what I'm saying? Cause Seiji's got plenty of that.
Yeah.
And someone who could also pull off the innocent thing too. I'm gonna go with Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning.
Yeah, I'd prefer to see her in this role. And she's got down. She's one of our great actresses today. And you know what's funny is back in the day, her older sister Dakota Fanning, greatest young actresses of all time, if you ask me. She's kind of fell into the ether as she's gotten a little older. I think her younger sister's just as good, and she's able to carry that on.
Yeah.
And she's great.
For mine, I have an actress that has always played the bookworm and recently played a teenager who loved books in a recent love romantic movie, and that is Emma Watson.
How old is Emma Watson?
28.
Okay, you did preference that early.
Yeah, she's 1990.
Yeah, wow.
So yeah, she's 28. She looks young enough to be a high school student. She played Belle's 16.
Yes, right.
So
Belle.
That's what I said. Like she played Belle. Belle is 16. So,
hello, Belle.
Yes, I'm going to marry you.
I just came back from the war.
And then we're going to have sex. You have done that entirely too much. You need to start. You need to start taking a shit before we podcast.
That would embarrass me. I didn't know it was gonna happen. See, when I laugh, I tighten my, like, all my hair goes in my stomach. I tighten up. It just pushes out anything that's there. Then we're gonna have sex. No one fucks like Gaston.
Oh,
Mitch.
Mitch, indeed.
hello,
Belle.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart as Gaston.
Jimmy Stewart as the Beast. She didn't shut her out my paw.
Oh, my chest hurts. That's good. Shit.
Okay, Emma Watson.
I think you've earned it.
All right, so our Whisper of the Heart remake. We have directing it Alfonso Cuarón, our composer Joe Hisashi. Our Baron is going to be voiced by Pierce Brosnan. Shiro, Grandpa Nishi, is Sam Elliott. Our Seiji is Freddie Highmore. And our Shizuku, our star of the film, Emma Watson. Solid remake, I believe.
Oh, shit. That's good stuff.
Oh, Bill.
Dropping my filth there.
That book you're never going to read. Gives the old man a novel, and she's like, if it's not too much trouble, could you read it right now? And she stays there. He reads it in like 4 hours, and you're like, she gave me that. I'd be like, do you have 2 years?
That's my average book completion time.
I mean, it usually takes me about a month. I'm like,
if you're reading hard, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a book on my stand there. When I first started reading it, I got halfway through. Haven't really touched it since. Every now and then, I'll read a couple pages. I'm working on almost a year now.
Read a couple pages and you're like, what's this? What is a book?
that meme, like, what is this Pokemon or whatever. Okay,
right,
so
yeah, you got a question?
That about does it.
Yeah, it does about that.
Is it your turn or my turn?
New. Remember, I asked if you had a serial killer to protect you last
That's
week.
That's right.
If you had a romance movie character to protect you from a serial killer.
Let me think here. All right, so I didn't know it was my turn, so I will just spit one at you here. I really did like this idea of taking a Japanese anime film and converting into live action.
Yes.
We will do this in the future. We will probably pull this. What are some that come to mind when you think, for the factory, what you would like to do? Anime. Japanese anime.
Obviously, Akira is the first one that comes to mind, because Akira is the... like, the kind of the epitome of it. Spirited Away kind of comes next. Not because that's my favorite. Like, Spirited Away is not actually my favorite, nor is it really in my top, like, three. Actually, I have more above it. But Spirited Away, I feel, is the one... I mean, that's what Hayao Miyazaki won the Oscar for. It is a phenomenal story. I feel like it's just more westernized than any of the others, almost.
You
like,
think so? Spirited Away is?
In
Japanese,
like,
bathhouse for the ghosts?
in terms of it's like a... No, I mean like in its appreciation.
Okay.
Yeah. And so like that's up there. I love Howl's Moving Castle. Princess Mononoke would be an absolute like dream for me to see, because that would just be so epic. Really, any Studio Ghibli movie.
Yeah.
Easily. But I think Akira outside of that would be the easiest one to say, like, this is what we need. The closest thing you'll see to an Akira live-action remake is actually Chronicle, if anyone's ever seen Chronicle,
yeah.
With Michael B. Jordan's in it. And
what's that fucking guy?
Nicholas Holt.
No, he was in everything right when around that time. Fuck. But, yeah, I know what you mean.
Chronicle, I mean, it's a story about a boy who's kind of a no one, and everyone always, he's like the shrimp of the gang, and then it comes to light that he has these, like, these powers.
They
kind of goes mad.
All the friends find that, like, that alien thing, and they get their powers.
Yeah.
Like, these powers, yeah.
Yeah. So,
not,
like,
that's not what Akira is, but
yeah,
it's kind of.
But
like
similar. That. Like, Akira, yeah, like, he, this kind of nerdy kid, not nerdy, but kind of, like, weak kid, the weak kid of the gang, gets these really strong powers, and all of a sudden, everyone has to bow to him. You know, he's in charge. He's the leader, and he kind of goes mad with power, and it's amazing.
Yeah, movies.
And I mean,
incredible.
That's been, you know, started up again and closed off millions of times
in live action.
Yeah, in live action realm. So that's definitely what I would aim for.
Yeah,
if we could do it.
I would say also Akira is probably my top pick. Princess Mononoke for sure. If I were to go to something like maybe a little more obscure, I'd go like a Paprika. Ooh, you know, it'd be good as Steam Boy.
Steam Boy would be good.
Steam Boy would be fun. Check these out if you haven't. How about
Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z: Return of Cooler.
Yeah.
Cooler's Revenge.
Return of the Yeti Cooler.
If I were to make a Dragon Ball movie, it would probably be Dead Zone. That was like the first Z movie, and It's a pretty cool story. How about I don't know why I'm so big on Lupin the Third.
It would
be fun. I think part of the charm of Lupin the Third is that it's anime, but
because there's goofy shit that goes on. Like, yeah. I was watching Castle of Cagliostro. Lupin the Third is a story of a thief, basically, and they're in like a car chase, and he just like puts on the engines and goes on the side of a fucking hill,
like 90 degree angle.
The music's phenomenal. It's a great story.
Yeah. All those. There's plenty of movies of Lupin. There's plenty of shows. They've made a few live action movies over in Japan. I've never seen any of them, but.
I don't know if it would have that charm factor.
Yeah, it's missing some.
It's Sonny Strait. You need Sonny Strait doing that voice. It's his voice. His voice is so confident.
He only does
like,
it in those movies.
Yeah.
Those movies that we watched, you know, a few years ago. So stuff like that. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, that would be a good one for, like, a poll once we, you know, kind of dive more into the anime genre.
Because
I do believe there are people out there who appreciate this kind of art form and would want to maybe take part in the fun of, you know, the factory of it all.
Yeah. Alrighty, well, that about does it for our show this week. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out on any of our other podcasting platforms. You can find us on Audioboom. That's our primary source. But we're also on Spotify, iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and wherever else you find your podcasts. Also, you can find us on Twitter, at The Bros Movie Pod. We post a lot of things in terms of like what we're going to be watching this week, clips on upcoming movies and trailers and teasers and things like that. We also retweet a lot of great, great, great podcasts. Be sure to check those out if you're looking for some different pods to listen to. You can also find us on Facebook.
Yeah, you just hop on that Facebook and type in The Brothers Movie Factory in the old search bar there. You'll find us. Hey, if you follow us, like us on there, you'll see what we're watching every week, get new posts, new information, links, as well as I try to make some fun memes.
Yar.
Check them out. There you have it.
There you have it. Well, that is the movie. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you liked the little twist with an animated film instead of a live-action movie. And if you haven't seen it, be sure to watch it. But until next week, brothers.
I dreamed of living
alone but fearless.
Secret longing
to be courageous.
Loneliness kept
bottled up inside.
Just reveal your brave face.
You'll never know you lied. Country roads, take me home to the place.
We're mixing them up.
I belong. West Virginia, West Virginia.
Mountain mama,
take me home.
Down concrete road.
Brothers?
Brothers.
Brothers.